Hi there, and welcome to this episode of the Everyday Millionaire Mindset Matters podcast, where I'm joined by my wife, Olympic mental performance coach, Stephanie Hanlon-Francy. In these episodes, Stephanie and I have a conversation about the different aspects of what we refer to as Mindset Matters, because we believe that for those who are awake, we are living in and through the most impactful time in history. Your view of the world is the filter for how you will experience the evolution and changing dynamics of it. Our intention is to provide you with ideas, nutritious food for thought, and some tools that you can use to help you in being your greatest self and living your best life. Listen in. Enjoy. Stephanie, we're back.
We are back, hon.
It's been a very, very busy a little while, and now we're going into March, and March is actually busier. Lots to do, lots of things going on. We're just returned from Calgary, where we did a think tank. It was unbelievable. It was so good.
I'm still a little bit humbled and overwhelmed by that entire experience over the weekend with JG, you, myself, and these amazing participants in think tank.
Clarity equals velocity. What a great group of people committed to their life by design, creating it. They were full on participating. They came from all over. Funny, we held it in Calgary, and there was no one from Calgary. So we all went into Calgary, and then of course weather hit. It got cold. Oh my gosh! But we made it. We warmed it up. We were pretty warm. It was great.
We warmed it up, is what you're saying.
Exactly. It was fantastic. And then, you know, given what happens in the world these days, then there was flights and late flights and delayed flights. And oh my gosh. Anyways, we are here. It is a small price to pay for loving what you do. And that's a little bit about what we're talking about. An extension of the weekend, but into a whole new topic. Well, I don't want to say a whole new topic, but a new topic. We're going to unpack Ikigai.
Ikigai. Oh my gosh. I love this topic so much because it links back to so many conversations we've had over the years around purpose. So I'm excited, but it's a Japanese concept. So I really want to make sure that we unpack it in a way that's respectful to the process. And it's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years old.
Yeah, well, that may add up to thousands, but it really is about finding purpose. And, you know, there's an overarching context for it all is that we look at what they do in the East, as in when we look at East versus West and, you know, tradition and history, as, you know, this is Japan. And it's talking about the intersection of your passion, your profession, your mission, and your vocation. And that's something we talk about often. When we look at the seven areas of life, it all kind of encompasses that. When we talk about values, it encompasses that. And Ikigai is just another way of looking at it. And so this is an opportunity for us to kind of blend a little bit of what we do with this age-old tradition and age-old methodology, if you will, that I think we're all working backwards from at some level, if you have some awareness of around it.
Well, when you think about some awareness around purpose, you know, how many times have I heard over the years, whether it's a friend, a client, a family member, it's like, why am I here? Like, why am I on this earth? What am I doing here at this time in this space? And I think it's a really eye-opening question, and it can take someone on a new trajectory when it comes to their life. When you ask yourself, why am I here? What's my purpose? Some people call it a calling, and many people don't. There's many people just walking around thinking, you know, going to the concert and, you know, jumping on a plane to Vegas is the next greatest best thing. It's not a judgment. But when you look at what you're talking about, hon, is that how do we take the Eastern philosophies and blend them with our newer Western philosophies? So Ikigai is an Eastern philosophy from Japan into our conversation in the West about purpose and about values and about calling. And what I love about Ikigai is that it actually takes us through a process. Do you want to dig into the process?
Well, I think we should start to. I think we give it a little bit more context, you know, that ultimately I want to go back a little bit, you know, that we are raised in a Western culture, or we're parents who are raising children, and we get into sending our kids to school. But the fundamental philosophy within Western culture and Western schools is that you go to school for 12 years and then you go to some kind of post-secondary education and university, college, whatever that might be, a trade school. And there is this kind of way to do it, but sometimes we don't stop to think about what is it that we're doing? Why are we doing it? Have we really got into the world of do something you love as opposed to do something because it pays really well? And how often have you and I over the years talked to young people who, or adults as a matter of fact, when you think about it, is they go to university, they get a degree, they spend 4, 5, 6 years, they spend a lot of money, they come out of university with that degree, and then they go into a profession that has nothing to do with the degree because they've gone to school realizing after graduation that it's not what they wanted to do, it's what their parents wanted to do. So what if we actually step back from that, you know, in two phrases? First, as parents, are we really paying attention to what our kids love to do, or are we asking them to live into our kind of dream, what maybe what we have accomplished or wish we would have accomplished? And then secondly, if we did find ourselves, you know, in a life or lifestyle or job that we're doing something just for the paycheck, how do we step back from that and then question it, saying, okay, what could it be that I'm living a more fulfilled life, more happiness, more joy, and still make money doing it? I guess that's really how we unfold this question, don't you think? Or what do you think?
I do. And, you know, when we started, we discovered back in the day that it was close to 80% of people that went to university ended up not doing what they were trained in university to do. That's a lot. That's high. So university, coming out of university at 18 or 19 years old, I certainly didn't know what the heck I wanted to do. And it was a good, you know, I squeezed 6 years or 4 years into six and I still wasn't happy. So I think there's a place where as parents or as people who are helping others step into their purpose is that we start that conversation sooner. And as the adults and as the grownups and in the family, I think it's important that we have that conversation first with our partners and that we're modeling that. And that's what I really got out of this weekend, is that the couples that were there, because it turned out into being a couples weekend, which was magical. And most of them were parents, or they had family or clients that they were very committed to. And the question was, am I modeling this? Am I modeling what it is that I believe in, my values, in my seven areas of life? Do I have the right people on the right seats of the bus or in the circle of support where they're supporting me? And as we unpack that conversation, I realized is that so many of us aren't modeling what we want our kids to step into. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think the Ikigai is such a great conversation, because when you break it down into all of the areas, and we bring the conversation, we meld it into the seven areas of life and into the values conversation that we have, we ask some of the most important questions.
Okay, so let's take a look and break this down. Let's start to put a little bit of meat on the bone when we start to consider, you know, what is it that we're talking about, you know, pursuing and purpose. You know, we have to come back from the most fulfilling parts of our life is when we are being a contribution. You know, many who are parents would say that, you know, regardless of what I do for a living, you know, my purpose here is to be an amazing parent and to raise amazing children. They actually, that is their true purpose. Others have kids simply because they want to carry on their name. You know, there's some, you know, there's different depths of it. Not one is right and one is wrong. But ultimately, when we think about purpose, we say, why are we here? And we know, and what we've learned over the years is that when you're being a contribution to others outside of yourself, that is when you'll be experiencing the greatest degree of happiness and joy, fulfillment. So the first question that we start to break down is when we step back from that and say, what do we love to do? Now, let's put a context on that. You and I have known many starving artists, if you will, primarily musicians, but artists who are really great at what they do. And what they love to do, for example, is play music. We'll use that as an example. I think it's a kind of a go-to example in this case. But somebody says, well, I love to do that. And when they're playing music, most are enjoying what they're giving as a gift to those people who listen to their music. Now, many can play music and enjoy it on their own, and that's a bit of a hobby. But then there's those individuals who want to take their music to the masses. You know, what do I love to do? Well, we'll use music as an example. And they think music, they live music, they sing music, they listen to it, they study it. And it's really what they're obsessed about when they go on to play music. And then they say, well, can I make a living doing it? And that's where we end up with the starving artist. So I don't quite know where I'm going with that. But the point is that when you're trying to find purpose, you have to ask yourself some fundamental questions. In this kind of list of questions that I'm considering is, when am I the most present? And that is such a great question. When am I the most present? Because if you're really loving what you're doing, you're staying present to it. Do you want to comment on this?
No, I just don't want to step over the fact that our starving artists of the world absolutely love what they do. And that is where the most present. But there's a mindset or a belief system that I can't make money doing what I love to do. There's way too many great musicians out there. There's way too many great artists, way too many great painters. I could never make a living. I better go over here and listen to what my parents said and, you know, find a plan B. Make sure I can find a money-making job so that I can do my art. So that's where I think we're wanting to bring that conversation a little bit closer. So what do you love to do? Where are you the most present? And to me, when I think about where I'm the most present is when I'm presenting or when I'm coaching or when I'm with a client. Mm-hmm. It's when I'm the most present.
And that's when we really, you know, obsess over the details. Now, we love to do this podcast and, you know, we're present to this podcast. It is actually not easy to do. And as much as we, you know, we're always looking to be better and improve it, but we have a team of people that are supporting us. We do, in fact, obsess over some of the details, although I'm sure that on the other side of it, it may seem like we don't. We really do. So when we're trying to determine what we love to do, in your case, my case, we know that our purpose is to be and make a difference in others' lives, to be a contribution, to have an impact. And the podcast is one of the ways that we do that. You know, whether it's the podcast or our coaching or our programs that we put on, like the Think Tank this past weekend, we know what we love to do. And that's when we're the most present. That's when we obsess over the details. And there's a really good question when we're trying to determine what you love. And the question is, what would you do if you weren't allowed to tell anybody else about it? Now, that's an interesting question, isn't it?
Wow, it is, especially in the world of performance, is that people know what you do because we're in the performance world. But if you weren't allowed,
I would rephrase that question. What would you do regardless of what anybody else thinks about it?
Would you buy a helicopter if your neighbor didn't know?
No, that's a different conversation. That's a different conversation.
I digress.
This is about what would you do? And so what would you do if you weren't allowed to tell anybody else about it? And what would you do in another, and to expand on that, what would you do regardless of what anybody else thought about what you were doing? So this gets to the question of what do you love? And if you can answer and start to answer those three questions, you're on the road to discovering that.
Would you do it if you still didn't get paid for it?
Well, perhaps that's a question. Okay, once again, we're discovering what we love. So in Ikigai, they're not suggesting in that philosophy, they're not suggesting that you don't get paid for it. As a matter of fact, the whole premise of Ikigai is to do what you love to do, bring your gifts to the world, and in fact, be paid for it.
100%. And that's, I think, what gets stopped in our Western conversation is that we don't really believe that we could get paid to do what we love to do. So there's that disconnect there. And I think why Ikigai is so important is that it brings that, what am I doing? What's my purpose? What do I love to do? Where am I the most present? And can I get paid for it? And can I be paid handsomely for my gift?
Yes. So if we relate that to some of the work that we're doing in values work, because people go, I don't know what my values are. And, you know, one of the things that we do and one of the conversations we have is just ask yourself, where do I spend my time? What do I talk about? What do I think about? Where do I spend my money? Or what do I spend my money on? What do I surround myself with? These are all indications of what your values are. And in this context, you know, when you think about Ikigai, you know, where and when am I the most present? When am, or what am I obsessing, or when am I obsessing over the details? And what would you do if it didn't matter what anybody else said about what you were doing? So these are ways to kind of dig and unpack what it is that you would love to do. What are your highest values in that context? So finding out what you're good at, and this is a real common thing that people do, and I know that you and I have been guilty of it, but we've changed our philosophy around it over the years, and that is that a lot of people consider what they're good at, and many spend far too much time working on their weaknesses. And the Okinawa, or in the philosophy of Ikigai, they want you to double down on your strength. And so that you're not struggling to compete, you're looking at a place where you can take some passion, some skill that you have, and really evolve and really develop it. And that kind of shines a light on what you're good at. And when you're good at something, and when you have some natural abilities around it, if you continue to work on it, then you get really great at it. And that then becomes something that you can bring to the world and get paid for.
And we've talked about it before, is that, you know, I'm not good at organization or paperwork or accounting or numbers and stuff. So it's like, okay, so should I be focusing on that? Because that's my weakness. And the truth is, for me, I've never been an advocate of that. I said, you know what, find out what your strengths are and then bring and surround yourself with people who are good at those things. You know, it's JG's story about Nancy and who loves, you know, receipts. He hates receipts, love receipts. And maybe we'll dig into that story one day, but you find your people, you find that match. And I think the other piece of Ikigai that really resonates with me is, if you ask yourself the question, okay, what do I love to do? What am I good at? What am I obsessing about? What, you know, what would I do if nobody knew? But does the world need it?
Mm.
And that's where we're at right now. And that's why I love this conversation, is because the world that we're living in right now in 2024 needs a lot. They need a lot of people who understand their purpose. And when you get that, and then you can drill down and figure out what the world needs, this is kind of what brings that Ikigai together, is that, yes, I believe for what we're doing right now, the world needs these conversations. The world needs communication and couples and individuals communicating at a high level in a way that they're getting their point across. So I believe that we're really moving towards our own Ikigai.
Well, you know, it's interesting that in the workshop that we did this past weekend in the think tank, Clarity Equals Velocity, everybody that was in that room, and it was a small group of people, a relatively small group of people that were there, but they all were taking responsibility for showing up in their life, being the best version of themselves in their life. But not only that, is developing those strengths that they have, acknowledging that they have strengths and maybe they had to unpack them a little bit, but also within the context of their families, how does that clarity create velocity, and how does that clarity create a really great environment and family culture? We talked about family mission and individual mission statements, and we really got into it. So when you see that, the part of the Ikigai is being able to ask yourself the question of, are you a natural leader, for example? Are you a natural leader or even a collaborator? There's a place where, to your point, is that in these times right now, and we talk about this every week because, you know, both of us follow what's going on in the world. We're looking at the evolving, you know, potential of a very significant war. Some are referring to it as a World War III, and whether that comes to fruition or not, there's a lot of unrest. There's a lot of protests going on in the world. There's a lot of government pushback right across. You know, really doesn't matter where you are, whether it be Europe or, you know, get over into, you know, think about Ukraine, think about Russia, think about what's happening right here in Canada. And it really is getting kind of, I don't know, a little bit frightening sometimes. The point is this, that leaders are a necessary part of change that we're going through, as, you know, on a global scale, and from my perspective. So we have to ask ourselves, when we're looking out there, are you, I don't like to use the term natural leader, but we'll talk about natural leader. I think that if you have a propensity to lead, to want to lead, you could in fact be considered a natural leader. Is that a strength you need to work on? Probably yes. And if not a strong leader, are you a strong collaborator? You know, are you a great Sherpa? That's the term I like to use. You know, that Sherpa that supports a leader. You know, leaders need those individuals that can get behind them sometimes and push them up the mountain. You follow?
I do. It's like the circle of support we talked about, it, that there's an inner circle of people who you trust with everything. And then there's people that just outside of that who are 100% vested. They have a vested interest in your success and you have a vested interest in their success, but not everybody's doing the same thing. Not everybody's pulling on rope the same way. If we understand and identify what our strengths are and what our gifts are, then you put a great team together. That's what I love about team. And I always say that life is a team sport. And you don't always have to be first liners. You know, you need a third, a second, you need a goalie, you need a coach, you need a training staff. You need people that love to do what they love to do so that you bring them together. And the most successful teams, I believe, in the world all have that same common, you know, whether it's purpose, calling, or a reason for being. And to me, that's what Ikigai means, is that you have a reason for being. Like, what do you love to do? What are you good at? Because sometimes they're not the same thing. You may love to do this, but you're not good at it. Right? I love to sing, but I'm not good at it, as all my friends know. Sometimes they'll dress me up in the outfit and put me in the background, but I can't sing, but I love to do it. So it doesn't mean that that's not part of my calling. It's just knowing myself and not beating myself up for not knowing what I love to do. I had a friend years ago who loved to act and loved to sing. She was never any good at it. And it really eroded her confidence. It really was like, I love to do it, but now I'm a waitress. But when you love to do it, but you're not good at it, there's a self-awareness piece that comes into that. And, you know, when we have that self-awareness, sometimes it's humbling. You know, it's just humbling. I love to do this, but I'm not great at it. Or I love to do it. I'm great at it. Can I get paid for it? And does the world need it? That's the piece, that the fourth question that I think the Ikigai brings to and wraps kind of it into a bow, is that what does the world need? And does the world need what you have to bring? And I think we miss that in our Western culture.
We do. But, you know, I want to go back a little bit, because something that you said kind of tweaked something that for me, which is that over the years, and I know that this has happened to me personally, which is we don't necessarily recognize our gifts. I know for you, it's one of sometimes the annoyances, one of the annoyances that you have with me, because sometimes we do things and we don't think we're good at it. It's just what we do. You know, that's the question. You know, somebody will say, you know, you're really good at that. And the response is, yeah, okay, well, it's just what I do. How'd you get so good? I don't know. It's just what I do. So we don't necessarily recognize what we're good at, what our gifts are. And so sometimes it's helpful to have a conversation with close friends that say, you know, and are willing to be honest with you, not only, no, you can't sing, but we love it when you do anyways, but you're not good at it. But it's also good to have those friends that can point out to you, like, do you realize how good you are? Do you realize that that is really a gift? You should work more on that gift, perhaps. So sometimes it's helpful to get our friends or even family to point it out and then not be in denial about it. You know, there's something that, you know, so to that end, so, you know, when I, through that time where I was a big brother in the Big Brothers, Big Sisters program, and my little brother was Jesse, and, you know, Jesse was, you know, in a really tough neighborhood, but he was really, really good in school at math. He was like all-star, and he had to, in his world, he had to dumb it down. He actually strove to be mediocre, which was always my kind of conversation with him. Don't strive to be mediocre. But what was happening with him is that he was embarrassed by it, because math came to him really easily. It was a no-brainer. He didn't have to spend any time on it, and he would just crush all of his math exams. It came easy to him. Now, Jesse's now 40-ish years old and has gone on to do very well with many things in his life, but he relies a lot on the math that he now, you know, that he uses today, and it comes naturally to him. It would have been interesting to say, okay, you know, could that have turned into something even bigger, greater, grander if, you know, if he wouldn't have been shut down by the circumstances or whatever it was in how he lived growing up. I mean, he was coming from an interesting or a challenging childhood, if you would. And that's part of the reasons that I was in the Big Sisters, Big Brothers program. But my point is that, he was amazing at school. So ask yourself, were there subjects that came really easy to you? And it's another way for you to find out what you're good at. Really consider it and try and be honest with yourself. And don't, if you're too humble, you can get in your own way. Don't you think?
I do. And sometimes humility and too humble is also your ego's way of making you play small.
Find out what the world needs. So it was, you started that conversation. So it's ultimately about giving people something they want, but don't know how to get it or can't do it themselves. And that can fall into, you know, anything. I mean, health, wealth, relationships, be an engineer. You know, these are all endless, eternal markets that you can tap into. So you opened up the conversation about finding out what the world needs. Did you want to expand on that?
I do, because I think sometimes we think what we love to do is what the world needs. So there's a lot of energy that could be wasted by thinking that, you know, somebody needs this widget or the world needs this widget because it's what we love to do. So I think it's finding a combination about what we love to do, what we spend our time on, what we obsess about, what I'm good at, what can I be paid for? The final question is, does the world need it?
Mm-hmm.
Does the world need another widget? Does the world need another social media platform? Does the world need another influencer? What does the world need? And when we can identify that, and that's what I was thinking about for me in my coaching, is that I didn't know until I started getting feedback 5, 6, 10 years later from certain athletes that said, you have no idea that I needed that at that time. I didn't know I needed it. The confidence that started to come is that, okay, well, if I hit those three categories, do I love to do it? Am I obsessed by it? Could I be paid for it? And what world needs it? And that world was sport. And it kept drawing me back because the people that were involved and were committed to building their lives and relationships and maybe, in fact, their careers through sport, is that I found a niche. Wasn't glamorous. It certainly at that time was not, you know, super exciting. It didn't pay me a whole ton of money, but that particular world needed my message. And that's, I think, was the final piece for me that allowed me to commit to the purpose, is that this world, maybe not the world, but my world needed this. And I think that's the final piece of Ikigai that brings our passion, our mission, our love, our passion, what we're good at. Is it professional? Can we get it paid for? And when you look at, if you actually Google, we can maybe put it on this on in our notes, but when you look at where all the circles are of all those things, there's that Venn diagram that meets the middle, and that beautiful definition from the Japanese philosophy called Ikigai is a culmination of all of this conversation.
Mm-hmm. The first thing that we all have to step back from in this kind of a conversation is the possibility, you know, and to start to investigate the question. And, you know, when we look at what is the gap, so in other words, what are people looking for? Maybe what problems do they need solved, or what problems have you solved in your life? And you see that others could have the same problem that needs to be solved that you can support them around. I think a lot of times what begins to happen, though, is that you have a gift, you love what you do, but you don't know how to sell it. You don't know how to ask to be paid for it. And this is where partnership comes into play in terms of partnering with somebody that has a skill that you don't have. You know, you may not be brilliant at marketing, but there are some brilliant marketing people out there. Same as you may not be great at sales, but there are some brilliant people who are great at selling and love to sell something that they believe in. And so these are things that I think limit people. And when you step back from that and go, okay, here's what I love to do. I don't know how to get paid for it. I don't know how to sell it. I don't know how to market it. But if you're really great at what you do, there are somebody that can fill those gaps. So none of it, I guess, is easy. And that's what stops people from doing it. And then the next thing you know, they're into the TikTok of going to work and then saying, well, I need a paycheck. This is what I'm going to do. And I don't necessarily love it, but it's how I make a living. And this is just for this particular conversation, especially coming off our weekend, is making sure that, you know, or inviting you to consider, you know, are you living a life that is fulfilling? Is it bringing you joy? Are you Do you live a life that has lots of happiness in it because you're really loving what you do and that you're being a contribution, you're making a difference in other people's world? And this is, I think, what Ikigai at its very core is all about, so that you can live your passion, have fun. As JG's mantra is, if it's not fun, I'm not doing it. How's that?
That's great. And I think the other thing that when we realize is that there are people that will help us market and sell and promote. And when you think about word of mouth, for example, when you're being authentic, I'm being authentic and I'm being true to myself and the message is getting out and it's not like it's passionate, but not overly like trying too hard guy. You know, there's all of that that comes and people will resonate with you when you're doing those kinds of things. And in our world, when we know what we love to do, and I think about rain and think about real estate, it's like, you know what real estate has brought to us, but honestly, it's 30 years in or 25 years in. It wasn't overnight, and none of this is overnight. But I think if we slow down long enough and we ask ourselves these questions, you know, what do I love to do? What am I good at? What can I be paid for? And what does the world need? Maybe there's a great entry point. So anyway, I had a great time this weekend. I want to thank you and Cheryl and JG and Ruth and honestly, Jean from, it was such an amazing, amazing weekend. And I think I'm still processing. I hope we get to do it again, hon.
Well, there's no hoping. We're going to do it again because we love to do it. More to come. There's no hoping. There's no try. There's just do. We're going to do another weekend and we're going to rock it. And it's going to be fun. So I think that's it. I think we got that wrapped.
Thank you. That was fun.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. If you found value in the podcast, please take the time to rate and review and share with others. Share with your friends. As it is my goal to always improve and to provide the highest value for you, the listener, if you have any comments, suggestions, or questions you'd like answered, please email me at ceo@reincanada.com. That's ceo@reincanada.com. I look forward to hearing from you. And until next time, Patrick out.